Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Spillers After Show podcast. This episode is Ed Tankersley reading his original short story, Until This Is Over, at Spillers No. 3 on February 1st, 2016. Enjoy.
Okay, I'm very excited right now because I have the opportunity to say something that I think might be the coolest thing that could ever be said about a spiller, because the person who's about to come here on stage has been officially recognized as the first person ever on Twitter to use the hashtag blessed. I know, right? He did it back in 2008. I sort of feel like I can just stop the introduction right there. But I won't, because in addition to being somewhat internet famous, he's also a poet, a short story writer, obviously, and a novelist. He's working on his novel, The Distance Between Us. An excerpt of that was published in Four Chambers, Issue 2, and it was earmarked by reviewers as being a particularly strong piece in that collection. So he's here tonight. He's going to read his original short story, Until This Is Over. Everyone, please welcome Ed Tankersley. Ed.
That's such a good song. If you're too young to know that song, go find it, look it up. Find the video. The video is amazing. I've been here a long time. It used to be really kind of trendy, if you lived in Phoenix, to say Phoenix had no culture. Thank you to all of you for helping to put the lie to that slander. We packed this place. They had to take the curtain down because we packed the Crescent Ballroom on a freezing, you know, winter Monday night in Phoenix for literature. So that's pretty sweet. Big credit for that goes to Robert and Brian, who have put together just the top-notch fiction event here in the Valley. So thanks to them for doing all of this and making this event more amazing each time. This is only the third one, and the sky's the limit if they keep adding more stuff to this thing each time. Also, I wanted to do a shout-out to Jake and Kelsey of Four Chambers, who are doing amazing things for literature in the Valley, and who, despite that, also recommended me for this event to Brian and Robert, so thanks to them. And thanks to all of my friends. I hope I got to see all of you beforehand. If not, stick around. It was amazing to see so many friendly faces out here. My story is Until This Is Over. He came down the road in no apparent hurry, slowing now and again to gaze into a window of a house as he passed. It was a Monday and the New Year's holiday, and things were quiet on the street, kids and adults alike sleeping late. Stores closed, no place anybody needed to be, no cars. A jet high overhead, silent, trailing a white plume that broadened as it tailed away, a slash across the pale blue sky. To the east, clouds collided above the horizon, oozing reds and purples like an open wound. Down the block across the street, a U-Haul truck sat in a driveway, doors open, nobody around. As he drew nearer, he could see that the garage door was open, and inside, at the back of the garage, the door that led into the house was also open. Same with the front door. No sign of any person outside or in. He looked over his shoulder at the house behind him, the curtains drawn closed in the picture window. Then he turned back and stepped off the curb, crossed the street, and moved up the driveway alongside the moving truck and up the steps onto the porch. "Hello," he called out into the nearly empty front room, loudly enough for his voice to carry deeper into the house. He waited, looked to his left at the truck, back into the room, then at the quiet street behind him. He stepped inside. Moving boxes sat in haphazard stacks against the wall. Beyond the living room, through a wide archway, he could see another room and, at the back of the house, a sliding glass door through which the low winter sun projected an angled slash of light. He stood silently and listened, but heard nothing but the low-frequency hum of a refrigerator compressor and the thump of his blood pulsing through his ears. He walked into the kitchen. "Hello," he called out, again, though more quietly this time, and his voice sounded thin and hollow in the empty room. On top of the breakfast bar were a set of keys, a red leather wallet, a pair of drugstore sunglasses, and a box cutter. He stepped to the bar and picked up the knife, rolling it from one hand into the other as he looked over the wallet and the glasses and the small, tidy key ring, one house key and one car key. As he flicked the button on the box cutter forward and back with his thumb, extending and retracting the blade, he heard the squeak of the rollers as the door slid open and he turned to see a woman standing in the doorway, her features indistinct, her body a dark silhouette sliced out of the brightness behind her. "Can I help you?" She spoke with a voice clipped and too loud for the empty room. She took one tentative step, then stopped. She'd moved out of the backlight of the doorway and he could see her face, her jaw set and her brow knotted, alert and wary. She held a cell phone in one hand, raised to her chest, her thumb wrapped around the front and pressed against the touchscreen. She looked at the box cutter in his hand. "No," he said quickly, I'm sorry. He laid the knife on the counter carefully and without a sound. He smiled weakly and raised his hands, palms forward in a gesture of surrender. He dropped his chin toward the floor and looked up at her, but her expression and pose were unchanged. He lowered his hands to his sides and took a step back. "All of your doors are open." She nodded slightly. "Yeah, I'm moving stuff." "Look, I'm sorry," he said. I wasn't thinking. I called out a couple of times, but I didn't hear anyone. "I was out back on the phone." She shook her head slightly. "So you just let yourself in?" "Well, no, the door was open. I saw the moving truck. I guess curiosity just got the better of me." He raised his hands again, apologetically. "Hey, you know, I'm sorry. I'll get out of here." He turned away and started toward the front room. "Are you one of the neighbors?" she asked, her voice still short and sharp. He stopped in the arch doorway and turned halfway back toward her. He tried another smile. "Yes, I'm right behind here, on Acacia." She didn't respond, but turned her eyes from him and walked with an exaggerated confidence to the breakfast bar, and he watched her scan her possessions. Then she put the phone down alongside the keys and glasses and rested both hands against the countertop. "Okay," she finally said, then she exhaled a long breath. "It's pretty weird to find a strange man standing in my kitchen." "Yeah, I'm sorry," he said. "Especially with what's been going on around here," she said. "I know." She pushed her shoulders back and drew herself up to stand at her fullest height. "So you agree that this is not normal behavior?" "I've never done anything like this. I can't explain it." She looked him over then, and he stood and let her take stock of him. She nodded, crossed one arm over her chest, and gripped the other. "I'm Teresa," she said, letting her face relax into a strained smile. "Scott," he said, and gave a small wave, still standing just inside the entryway. "Scotty." "Well, it's nice to meet a neighbor, Scotty, however weird." She uncrossed her arms and walked from behind the island toward him, hand extended. He smiled then and shook her hand. "Since you're here," she said, "can you help me carry that table in?" They descended the ramp cautiously and awkwardly and turned to shuffle across the grass, twisting the table onto its side to maneuver the legs through the door. When they had it centered under the hanging lamp, she nodded to him and they set the table down, the legs clacking onto the tile. "Mercy," she exclaimed, and he smiled at the word. She pulled some stray strands of hair from her face and rolled her eyes. "The rest should be easy," she said, her breath labored. "As weird as it was, I'm glad you showed up." "I wasn't doing anything else." She leaned back against the bare wall and looked slowly over the room as if she were examining things that only she could see. Then she said, So you're on Acacia. Is that the one with thorns? Everything in the desert has thorns. She gave a surprised laugh. That's a cheerful thought. Don't say nobody warned you, he said. He watched her as she swept her eyes across the room again. Then he asked, you already unloaded the bed by yourself? No bed. I left him the bed. I'm having a new one delivered tomorrow. He gestured left and right with his head, sweeping the emptiness of the room with his gaze. Looks like you left him just about everything, he said. Yeah, well, we didn't have much by the end. He nodded, waiting for her to continue. Instead, she walked into the next room and he heard the refrigerator open. She came back with two bottles of water, opening one and taking a long drink as she walked. She offered the other to him. He took the bottle from her, then set it unopened on the table. She gave a small shrug and leaned back against the wall. I don't care. Stuff doesn't matter to me, she finally said, looking past him across the room and out through the open front door. All I wanted was to get out, and I got that. She drew a long, slow breath, then exhaled in an audible sigh. That's enough. He shifted, waited, watched her face. After a moment, she looked back at him, and he saw her face relax, reshape, rejoin him in the room. Anyway, she said, drawing a full breath, what's going on in this neighborhood? I mean, 2 days after I close on this house, they find that family. Yeah, he said. She waited, but he said nothing more. Did you know them? She asked. No, I think maybe I'd seen her and the kids sometimes when I was walking, if that was them. Are you scared? Not really, he said. I'm a little freaked out by it. He nodded, looked at his hands. Abruptly, he turned and walked to the front door. He twisted the knob to lock the deadbolt, then stepped away from the door. Thanks, she said, but he gave no reply, just stood and watched her as she picked at the label on her water bottle. She looked up suddenly and broke the silence. You want to help me unload the kitchen boxes? Then we'll get some sandwiches? Let me buy you lunch. Then, quickly, as though thinking better of it, oh, you probably have some place to be. No, I'm not expected anywhere. He glanced around the room. Sure, let's unload some boxes. She raised her water bottle in salute and headed into the kitchen. How about you unload and I'll stack things where I want them? Makes sense, he said, rounding the corner into the kitchen. He found her standing, hands on hips, looking at the countertop. What did I do with the box cutter? She asked. He looked at her blankly. It was right here on the counter. Yeah, she paused. You don't think you maybe slipped it in your pocket, do you? Just not thinking? He patted each of his pockets in turn, then again. Nope, nothing. He shrugged. Okay, I must have moved it somewhere. It'll turn up in a minute. No place to hide in here, he said. She laughed then. Nope, no place to hide. She walked into the kitchen and pushed a box toward him with her foot. See if you can get that open. By 11, they'd unpacked every box in the kitchen. They sat at the kitchen island drinking from cans of beer. She'd carried a small portable television from the bedroom and plugged it in on the kitchen counter, and a college football game was playing with the sound turned most of the way down. How long have you lived here? She asked. 4 years, I guess. You like it? Yeah, it's quiet, maybe a little boring. It's kind of hard to get to know anybody. She smiled, unless you just walk into their house when they're not looking. He raised his brows and shrugged. She leaned over and punched at his ribs lightly, playfully. He twisted quickly in his chair to avoid her touch, grabbed her wrist and squeezed hard, then slowly released her. Christ, you're strong, she said, rubbing her wrist. I mean, not that you wouldn't be, but... Did I hurt you? He asked. A little, I guess, but I started it. He took a long drink of his beer, draining it, then set the empty back on the counter. Yeah, you're kind of looking for trouble. He smiled at her. Out from the direction of the main highway, they heard a siren spiral up, then another. They sat and listened as the sirens grew louder, moving toward them, then past them, and up the street behind her house, where they abruptly stopped. "Is that your street?" she asked. He turned his head as if to listen for the location of the now silent sirens. "I don't think so. I'm a couple of streets farther." "Oh, I thought you said you were the next street over." "No." She cocked her head, furrowed her brow. "I swear you did." "No, I'm on Acacia. It's farther." She shrugged. "Whatever, I don't know the streets yet." She got up from her chair and went to the refrigerator, looked inside. She said, "Are you hungry? I don't want to go out there, but I could order something if you know a good place that delivers." "No, I should get out of here." "Really? I'd like to do something to thank you for carrying all my crap." "Don't worry about it." He got up, looked quickly around the room, patted his pockets. The percussive beating of an approaching helicopter thumped into the room. As it passed overhead, she walked to the back patio door and pulled the curtains aside. "I can't tell if it's police or news." The helicopter sound tailed away from behind the house. Then they could hear it grow louder as it circled back again. "This is freaky," she said, still watching out the window. "Let's see if there's anything on the news." She turned back and he was gone. "Scotty?" she called out. There was no response, nothing but silence for a moment. Then she heard a door close. She stepped quickly into the front room, and he was standing there, peering through the blinds out onto the street. "I thought you left," she said. He didn't turn, but held his eyes onto the street. "Is something wrong?" she asked. "No, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on." She said, "It must be big, with police and helicopters, right?" "Seems like it." "I'm going to see if there's anything on the news." She walked back into the kitchen and turned up the volume on the little television. She flipped through the channels, then again. Finding nothing, she walked back out to the front room. He was still at the window, but crouching now, looking up through the blinds toward the sky. "Can you see the helicopter?" she asked. "No, trees are in the way." She watched him scan the sky for a moment. "Listen," she said, "do you need to get home?" He didn't answer. "Maybe you need to get home." He stood and turned from the window toward her. The helicopter grew louder again. She crossed her arms over her chest, wrapped her outstretched fingers across her ribs. "Because if you don't, I wouldn't mind you sticking around for a while, until this is over, you know?" He nodded slowly, squeezed his eyes shut, and rubbed them vigorously, then blinked several times and gave a quick shake of his head. He looked at her and waited for the thumping of the helicopter to trail away. "Sure," he finally said. "I've got no place I should be." Thank you.
That was Ed Tankersley reading his short story, Until This Is Over, at Spillers No. 3 at Crescent Ballroom on February 1st, 2016. For more Spillers After Show podcast episodes, please go to spillersaftershow.com. For more information on Spillers, Phoenix, Arizona's premier short fiction storytelling event, go to spillers.net.